Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are looking at a phantom line item that is, you know, likely draining $60,000 a year or more from your business. And the crazy thing is, you will not find it anywhere on your monthly statements.
It is honestly just hiding right there in plain sight. And in this 2026 economic environment, ignoring it is one of the most expensive mistakes you as an operator can make.
Yeah, totally. We are coming to you straight from the My Pay Advisor operating floor today. I am your analyst co-host, and joining me is our senior payments advisor.
Glad to be here.
Today, we are talking directly to you, the operator. Specifically, you know, we are looking at U.S. merchants processing anywhere between $25,000 and $5 million in monthly card volume.
Right. That is the sweet spot for this specific trap.
Exactly. To set the stage, I want to pull a massive number from the Nilson report. According to their data, U.S. merchants paid $198 billion in credit and debit card fees in 2025.
Wow.
Yeah, that is a 70% jump since 2019. It is just a staggering amount of money leaving operating accounts.
It's a massive figure, for sure. But focusing only on the processing fees kind of misses the bigger financial picture.
Right.
Those fees are not actually the most expensive part of your contract.
Yeah.
The true cost, like the one that does the most damage to your working capital, is the merchant reserve account.
Yeah, the reserve.
Right now, with the federal funds rate sitting comfortably above 4%, having your capital trapped by a processor is, well, it is more punitive than it has ever been.
So our mission today is very specific. We are going to walk through the mechanics of the 180-day rolling reserve. We will expose the phantom costs operators are paying, and we will deliver an operator playbook on what you should do this week to free up that cash.
Definitely.
So let's start with the basic definition. What exactly is a merchant reserve?
At its core, a reserve is certainly merchant funds that an acquirer withholds from your daily settlement. Like, right, they intercept a percentage of your revenue before it ever hits your bank account.
Okay.
And they hold on to this money to cover potential chargebacks, ACH returns, and credit losses.
Let's pause there for a quick definition. When you say ACH returns, you're talking about electronic payments that bounce, right? Similar to a bad check.
That is correct. Whether it is a bounced electronic check or a credit card chargeback, the acquirer carries the ultimate credit risk on, you know, every single transaction you process. Mm. Think about the flow of funds. If a customer disputes a $500 purchase 3 months from now, the acquirer is required to make the cardholder whole immediately.
Right. They have to pay it out.
Yeah. And then the acquirer pulls that $500 from your business bank account to cover it. Mm. But if your account is empty or if your business has gone bankrupt and closed its doors, the acquirer has to absorb that loss.
Oh, wow.
So the reserve is their buffer. It funds those clawbacks before they hit your operating cash.
But wait, I have to push back a little here. Like, if I'm selling custom furniture online and I take thousands of dollars in orders but go bankrupt before shipping the product, the processor's on the hook for all those refunds.
Yeah, they are.
So they are carrying actual credit risk. So aren't they, you know, totally justified in holding my money? They are not doing this just to be greedy.
Well, you are right about the risk. I mean, the acquiring bank is essentially underwriting your business every time they approve a transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And Federal Reserve payment system data backs up their caution. It shows that card not present chargeback rates, which are online or phone orders, run 2 to 3 times higher than physical card present transactions.
Okay, that makes sense.
That is why e-commerce businesses see these reserve requirements so frequently. The problem is not really the concept of a risk buffer. The problem is the mechanism of the hold and who profits from the money while it sits there.
Which brings us to, I think, the biggest misunderstanding I see from operators. It is how the release clock actually functions.
Oh, yes.
Merchants will read their contract, they see the phrase 180-day release, and they think it works like an apartment security deposit.
They assume it is a one-and-done thing.
Exactly. They assume they give the processor a chunk of money up front, and then in month 7, all that money comes back at once.
That is a really dangerous assumption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It does not work like a one-time deposit.
Yeah.
You have to think of it like a treadmill that never stops.
A treadmill.
Yeah. The 180-day clock resets for every single daily batch you process.
Okay. Let's walk through the math so you can visualize exactly how this operates. So let's say it is day 0 and a customer pays $100 on your website.
Right.
After the network interchange fees, which are the base rates set by Visa and MasterCard and the processor's markup, your net revenue is roughly $97.
Correct.
Now, if your contract stipulates a 10% rolling reserve, the processor takes 10% of the gross amount. So that is $10.
Exactly. And they route that $10 to a segregated account at a sponsor bank. These are major institutions like Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, or BMO Harris.
So you receive the remaining $87 in your settlement.
Yep. And that $10 sits in that sponsor bank account for exactly 180 days. On day 180, that specific $10 from day zero is finally released into your daily settlement.
But here is the catch. The transactions you processed on day one start their own 180-day clock.
Exactly.
Day two starts another clock. So for the first 6 months of your contract, that reserve account just grows continually.
Right. It does not stop growing until you hit what we call the steady state.
So let's run a reality check on a larger scale. Say you are a merchant doing $500,000 in monthly volume. You have a 10% rolling reserve.
Okay.
Over 6 months, you are contributing $50,000 a month to that reserve. By month six, your steady state held balance hits $300,000.
Wow.
And because that treadmill never stops, as long as your volume stays consistent, that $300,000 remains permanently trapped for the entire life of your processing contract.
It is surprising how rarely operators actually model this out before signing the master service agreement.
Yeah, they just do not run the numbers.
They see 10% and only think about their daily cash flow. They fail to calculate the terminal balance. Having $300,000 locked away restricts inventory purchases, marketing spend, and hiring.
So if I have $300,000 permanently trapped at Chase or Wells Fargo, we have to ask the obvious question. Who is actually making money off my cash?
Right.
Because it certainly is not sitting in a vault gathering dust.
No, it is not. The acquirer is making the money. This is that phantom cost of capital we mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The painful contractual reality is that reserve funds sit in non-interest-bearing accounts for the merchant. The acquirer, however, collects the float income on your money.
Oh, man.
They earn interest on that massive pool of aggregated funds while you get zero. The Nelson report actually tracks the aggregate card industry chargeback and loss data, and it shows that acquirers intentionally set these baseline reserve rates to produce that float income.
So it is just a major revenue stream for them.
I
want to look at a real-world operator profile from our sources to put this into perspective. We have a direct-to-consumer subscription box company doing $800,000 a month in volume.
Okay, that is a solid business.
Yeah, and their acquirer put them on an 8% rolling reserve. So if we do the math, 8% of $800,000 is $64,000 a month.
Right.
Multiply that by 6 months, and at their steady state, they have $384,000 completely trapped.
We really need to break down the true cost of trapping that $384,000. Every business operates with a cost of capital. In finance, we call it a hurdle rate.
Let's define hurdle rate for everyone. That is basically what it costs you to borrow money, or like the minimum return you expect to make when you invest cash back into your own business. Right?
Exactly. If you have to take out a high interest loan to buy inventory because your own cash is trapped by the processor, that interest rate is your hurdle rate.
Makes sense.
So if this subscription box merchant has a 12% cost of capital, trapping $384,000 cost them over $46,000 every single year in lost business utility. But we also have to factor in the lost yield.
Right, because with treasury yields where they are in 2026, a 4.5% return on a standard money market account is a very conservative expectation.
Exactly. A 4.5% yield on $384,000 is another $17,000 a year in lost interest.
Ouch.
And the acquirer is collecting that yield instead of you. When you combine the capital cost with the lost interest, the true annual cost of that reserve is roughly $63,000.
That is just wild.
Over a standard 3-year contract, that merchant is losing nearly $190,000 in value before his single chargeback even occurs.
You are losing $63,000 a year. Think about that. You are effectively paying the salary of a junior developer every single year just for the privilege of letting the processor hold your own money.
Yeah, it is a tough pill to swallow.
And the craziest part is that this is not regulated by federal law. It is entirely dictated by a private master service agreement between you and the acquirer.
Right. Visa and MasterCard do not mandate these specific reserve mechanisms. They publish risk monitoring thresholds, sure. But the decision to hold your money, the timeline for holding it, and the refusal to pay you interest, all of that sits entirely within the private agreement you sign.
Okay, so I know what the operator listening is thinking right now. They are calculating their own trapped capital, realizing they are losing $60,000 a year, and their immediate instinct is to fire their processor today.
Of course.
Why can't a merchant just pack up, terminate the agreement, and find an acquirer with better terms tomorrow?
Because doing that triggers the two biggest traps buried in the master service agreement. The first trap is the termination tail reserve.
The tail reserve.
Yeah, when you cancel your contract, the processor does not just wire you your $300,000 the next day.
Right. Standard contract clauses allow the acquirer to hold those funds for the original 180 days plus an extra 30 to 90 days. But why 180 days? Like, why is that always the magic number? Why not 30 or 60 days?
It maps directly to the card network rules. Visa and MasterCard generally allow consumers up to 120 days to file a chargeback for a standard dispute, like, you know, receiving a defective product.
Okay.
But federal regulations allow it to 540 days for certain specific claims, a delayed delivery for a custom item that was purchased months in advance.
Oh, wow. I did not realize it was that long.
Yeah. So the processors take that 120-day window, add processing buffers, and land on 180 days to ensure they are protected from late arriving disputes.
Mm.
This means you might not see your full reserve balance for 9 to 12 months after you switch providers.
That is crazy.
And it usually arrives in unpredictable, staggered tranches.
This creates an absolute cash flow nightmare, which leads us directly to the second trap. We call it the double up.
The double up is brutal.
You switch to a new processor thinking you secured a better deal, but the old acquirer is holding your tail reserve for the next 9 months. Meanwhile, your new acquirer is going to require their own reserve from day one. So for at least 6 months, you are funding two separate reserves concurrently. If your steady state was $300,000, you suddenly have $600,000 missing from your operating account.
And operators who model their switching costs based purely on processing rates almost always miss this double up. It can easily consume a full month of gross revenue.
That kind of cash flow shock can destroy a growing business. Mm. But operators also face a massive hidden risk even if they stay with their current processor. It revolves around the infamous sole discretion clause.
Oh, yes.
The scariest three words in any processing contract. At acquirer's sole discretion.
Acquirers monitor your chargeback ratios very closely. Visa publishes a formal dispute monitoring threshold at a 0.9% dispute ratio.
Mm-hmm.
MasterCard sits slightly higher at 1.5% for their excessive chargeback merchant program. If you breach those numbers, you face severe network fines. But, you know, acquirers do not wait for you to hit those official network thresholds.
They jump the gun.
Right. They monitor their own internal risk models, and they tend to panic when a merchant hits just 0.5 to 0.75%.
But why do they panic so early? Like, if Visa allows 0.9%, why does the processor freak out at 0.5%?
Because chargebacks are a lagging indicator. A chargeback filed today is usually for a transaction that occurred 30 or 60 days ago.
Ah, I see.
So if your ratio hits 0.5% today, the acquirer assumes the undiscovered fraud currently in your system means you will breach the 0.9% limit next month. They act preemptively to protect themselves from network fines.
And because the master service agreement almost always states that the reserve can be modified at the acquirer's sole discretion, they do not need your permission to change the math.
Not at all.
I mean, I have seen operators get an email on a Tuesday saying their reserve is jumping from 5% to 25% effective immediately.
It happens all the time.
There is no notice period. There is no negotiation. If you're doing $1 million a month, a jump from 5 to 25% adds $200,000 to your held balance within 60 days. It is a dial the acquirer can turn whenever their risk department gets nervous.
Understanding these triggers is vital. The reserve percentage is never a static number.
Okay, I am sold. I see the trap, I understand the phantom costs, and I see the double up risk. I am leaving serious money on the table.
Yes, you are.
But practically speaking, I have a business to run and a million things to do this week. If I am only going to do a few things today to fix this, where do I start? Let's talk strategy.
Your immediate strategy starts with gathering the right data. You cannot negotiate what you have not quantified.
Exactly.
So pull your last 12 months of processing statements. You are looking for a line item labeled reserve, holdback, merchant reserve, or risk reserve. Find your current held balance.
And then run the numbers.
Right. Calculate your true steady state cost. Take that held balance and multiply it by your company's specific hurdle rate, plus the current 2026 treasury yields for a money market account.
Mm.
Get a concrete annualized dollar figure for what this reserve is actually costing your business.
Once you have that painful dollar figure in front of you, the next strategic move is pulling your master service agreement. Do not trust what the sales rep told you 2 years ago.
Definitely not.
You have to read the actual reserve clause. You need to verify four distinct things. First, the exact release period. Is it 180 days from the settlement date or 180 days from the batch close date?
That is an important distinction.
Second, map out the increased triggers. What exactly allows them to raise your rate? Third, find the tail reserve timeline for when you eventually leave. And fourth, highlight any instance of the phrase at sole discretion.
Yes.
Knowing where that phrase lives is your primary negotiation tool at renewal.
Then you need to force transparency. Send a formal email to your account manager requesting a written batch-by-batch reserve schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You want a spreadsheet showing exactly when each batch contributed to the reserve and the specific calendar date it is scheduled for release.
Mm-hmm.
If they cannot produce this within 10 business days, escalate the request to their risk operations team.
Keep the pressure on.
Processors rely on opacity. Forcing them to provide a paper trail creates accountability.
And then the next step is purely defensive. You have to monitor your chargebacks weekly. You cannot afford to wait for the monthly statement to arrive to realize you have a problem.
Way too late.
The single best defense against a sudden sole discretion reserve increase is keeping your dispute ratio strictly under that 0.5% threshold. If you see a spike, you need to respond to those disputes within 48 hours to keep your representment win rates high.
I am glad you mentioned representment. Let's make sure that is clear.
Right. Representment is just the industry term for the process of you, the merchant, fighting back. It is when you submit the receipt, the tracking number, or the communication logs to prove the charge was legitimate and win the money back from the cardholder's bank.
Right. And high representment win rates show the acquirer that your operations are tight, which keeps their risk compartment calm. This brings us to the actual negotiation. The ideal time to strike is at your 12-month contract renewal mark. Assuming your dispute ratio has remained below that 0.5% danger zone, you should formally ask for a step down.
What does a good step down look like?
Well, a standard, highly achievable win for accounts processing over $250,000 in monthly volume is a 50% reduction in your reserve requirement at month 12. Then you map out another 50% reduction at month 24.
But asking nicely gets you nowhere. You need credible threats. Get three competing quotes from other acquirers in your specific industry vertical.
Yes, this is crucial.
A competing acquirer will often quote a significantly lower reserve or even waive it entirely just to win your processing volume. You take those quotes back to your incumbent processor and force them to match the term.
Exactly. Acquirers make daily margin on your transaction volume. They would much rather reduce your reserve than lose your daily batches to a competitor.
That makes total sense.
To close this out, I want you to reconsider how you view this money. The most important shift you can make this week is a mental one.
Okay.
Stop thinking about the reserve as an unavoidable processing fee. It is your working capital. The contract is simply allowing the processor to borrow your working capital for free. Treat it like a bank loan you are giving to your acquirer and 0% interest. When you view it as a massive zero interest loan that you are funding, it completely changes how aggressively you will negotiate your next contract.
That is a brilliant analogy. Treat it like a 0% bank loan. But looking at the broader landscape, it makes you wonder about the future.
How so?
Well, we are seeing regulators start to aggressively crack down on junk fees and forced arbitration in other financial sectors. If processors are holding hundreds of billions of dollars of merchant capital, paying zero interest and profiting off the float, like how long until the SEC or the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau starts looking at merchant reserves as an unregulated banking product?
Oh, that is a really fascinating point.
Yeah, that regulatory scrutiny is something operators should definitely keep an eye on heading into next year. So pull those statements, run the math on your hurdle rate, and start treating your trapped capital like the asset it is. Because in the payments industry, murkiness is expensive and precision is the only way you get paid.